Hello everyone, you're listening to J Movie Talk, episode 121, as I'll be talking John Wick and John Wick 2.
Baba Yaga, it was just a fucking car, just a fucking dog.
Just a dog. Vigo.
Yeah.
When Ellen died, I lost everything. Until that dog arrived on my doorstep. A final gift for my wife. In that moment, I received some semblance of hope. An opportunity to grieve on alone. And your son took that from me.
Hakan.
Stole that from me. Killed that from me! People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
All right, guys, I am back for episode 121, as I'll be talking about the two John Wick films that coincide with the release of John Wick Chapter 3, which comes out Friday, the 17th of May. For anyone who is a new listener or hasn't had a chance to listen to the previous episode, this is I'm full on into May Action Month and everything, where I decided to talk about some action movies, but also have it coincide around a major release. And of course, it's being John Wick Chapter 3. So for this episode, I'm going to be talking about the first two John Wick movies. It's been a while since I've done a double film. It's been a while since I did a double film on the podcast. The last time that I did it was back in I don't know if it was actually October, but it was for Halloween, where I kind of went a little crazy with it, where I did 3 months of talking about nothing but horror films. And one of the episodes, I did a double feature of Brooke Adam films. Why I did that, I still don't know why. I just kind of did it like that, where I talked about Invasion of the Body Snatchers and The Dead Zone in one episode. So I kind of wanted to do that again here, and here it kind of even makes more sense because of the fact that this franchise of John Wick is basically one long story and everything. So here in the first half, I'll be talking about the first movie, just John Wick, which came out in 2014, which stars, of course, Keanu Reeves as the title character of John Wick, Michael Nukovic, I believe I'm saying that right, as Vigo. Alfie Allen as Losef, Willem Dafoe as Marcus, Dean Winters as Abby, Adrian Padalecki as Miss Perkins, Bridget Moynihan as Helen, John Leguizamo as Aurelio, Ian McShane as Winston, Lance Reddick as the hotel manager, even though his character name is Sharon, but we never actually hear his character name mentioned. Also, we have David Patrick Kelly as Charlie, Clark Peters as Harry, and Kevin Nash as Francis. So, basically, what we have here is the movie kind of kicks off with John Wick, who, in his opening scene, is basically finishing up a job, and he's badly injured, and he gets out of the car, and he's on the phone, and before he can actually finish what he's doing on the phone or whatnot, he passes out. And then the movie kind of goes from there, where we get kind of some flashes of where his wife, him and his wife, having happy time and whatnot. This is all in flashback pretty much, and everything. And he's basically, living and enjoying his life with his wife, Helen, and everything. And then we see where she passes away, unfortunately. And after this, John is very tore up about this and everything. And basically, and I was never actually confirmed like when exactly she did this. I don't know if it was her dying wish that she did this, or she had this in her will or something like that. But John gets a package delivered to him, and it's a little puppy or whatnot. And this basically the last thing that he has that's a connection to his wife. So like I say, John is just basically kind of just living his life, normal, regular life or whatnot. And it's him and his dog. And one day he decides, he doesn't decide, he's at the gas station. and everything. And Losef, played by Alfie Allen, he and some of his people, they show up and kind of, he takes in a liking to John's car or whatnot and asks John, like, how much is it for sale? And, you know, to sell or whatnot. And John's like, it's not for sale and everything. And then, you know, they kind of have like an exchange of words, and John drives off and goes home. And later that night, John is awakened where Losef and his goons have basically broken in. They beat up John real bad, and they kill the dog, and they take the car. And this is pretty much what kind of set not only the events of this movie, but basically kind of sets the whole franchise in motion, is where John is basically forced out of retirement and brought back in, you know, to this underworld that he was once a part of on a regular basis and everything. So after that, where John is basically, he gets up, he cleans up, he buries the dog, and everything like this. And Losef, being the kind of young punk that he is, he goes to a local car shop or whatnot, where it's owned by Aurelio, played by John Leguizamo. And he tries to sell the car, but Aurelio refuses because he know who car that is or whatnot. And so they basically like, oh, well, we're going to take our business elsewhere type of thing. And then after that, Aurelio, he calls John. John comes and he lets him know, like, hey, well, I know who has your car and everything like this. So I want to talk about Alfie Allen's acting performance in this movie. I mean, he's probably, well, he's not probably, he is best known for, well, he's best known for being two things. One, he's best known for being Lily Allen's, you know, younger brother, you know, singer Lily Allen and everything. And he's best known for playing Theon on the HBO series Game of Thrones. But here is like one of the movies that he's also known for, where, and I thought he does a good job here, even though you literally hate him and everything like that. He has some of his Theon-isms in this movie, I should say. Especially bad Theon, and everything, when he was trying to take over Winterfell and everything like that. And everything on Game of Thrones. He has some of those same isms here. And he plays like these swarmy young punks, you know, very well. I thought he did a good job, and you really don't like him in this movie. So, which lets you know that the actor is doing a pretty good job here or whatnot. Basically after that, Aurelio talks with Viggo, who is Losef's father, and tells him what exactly went down and why, you know, he refused to take the car because it was John Wick's car, which Viggo is like, oh, and everything, because John is made to be this boogeyman.
Baba Yaga.
If you will, that's probably the best of the killers and everything like this. So if you do something bad against him, you know that hell is going to be coming back your way pretty much. So Viggo tries his best to try to like smooth things over. So he calls John while John is cleaning up, and John doesn't say anything. He just listens. And Viggo is very, you know, he's very like pensive and like walking on eggshells basically when he's talking to John. Like, yeah, I'm sorry about your wife and, everything like that. And hopefully everything that's happened recently, we can work past this. And John never says anything, and John just hangs up. He goes down into the basement and he takes a sledgehammer and starts beating through the floor, and he basically digs up all his old, you know, ammunition and everything, because now he's really supposed to become that guy that he basically stopped being for his wife. So with all of that, I think that's one thing I like about this movie is Keanu Reeves acting, where I think if anyone else played it, for the most part, it could have been just like a run-of-the-mill action film that could have been here today, gone tomorrow type thing. But Keanu Reeves, being a good actor that he is, and everything. He brings some humility to the character of John Wick, and he doesn't say a whole lot in the movie, but he says a lot with his face, which I always say that that's something that a really good actor can do. Not too many actors can say a whole lot with their faces and not say any words, but there's a few who are really good with saying more with just expression than anything, and Keanu Reeves does a really good job here of conveying that. And of course the action scenes are really good as well, and you could tell that Keanu took the time to really get this style down, because I mean, yeah, we've seen him in the Matrix movies and, you know, and things like that, which of course he had to get, you know, in shape and get used to the style for that. But here is very, it's very tactical, whereas with like him in the Matrix movies, it was more karate and everything like this. Here is more tactical, from an army standpoint. And he kind of, one thing they did kind of do in this, in these movies too, is that they kind of mix in the army tactical with some of the martial arts, and it's really cool too, especially some of the behind the scenes that I've seen, of him training and things like that, of how they go about it, and it's really some really cool stuff. And everything. So Viggo, after he, you know, he's basically paranoid at this point, because he know who John Wick is, and he knows he's gonna be coming for his, not only for his son, but probably for him as well. So he decides to hire another assassin, Marcus, played by Willem Dafoe, to basically kill John, even though him and John are friends and whatnot. And Marcus accepts to do this, and everything, which I thought was kind of interesting. But well, I'll talk about that when I get to that part. One of my favorite things about the first movie is the soundtrack. Because the soundtrack in itself kind of plays a role in the film. And every song and the musical notes in the movie kind of tells its own little story as well, throughout. And I kind of like that as well. And then one of my favorite actors shows up in this movie, even though his part here is a little bit smaller. Talking about Ian McShane, who plays Winston, who is over the Continental Hotel where John and all the other assassins go to stay and everything. And like I say, here you just get a glimpse. You kind of get just a little taste of Winston. And once again, any other actor, I think, playing Winston would have played it differently. But Ian McShane being the actor that he is, and even though sometimes he can be a little, you know, over the top and a little hammy, but here he isn't. He is a little bit more reserved and everything. And with him in this movie, at least, less is more, because here is not really about him. So he's just here in a way as somewhat of a guide. Well, I wouldn't say a guidance, but more of a mentor-ish type to John. But I'll probably talk about more about him in the second film than opposed to this one. So John, you know, he gets all of his weapons and everything. He goes to this club where he finds out where Losef is and everything. And gets into this crazy shootout. And I like how the music in the club, you know, plays really a part in this as John is stalking through the club. He's killing off, like, bodyguards and things of that nature, while Losef and his friends, you know, are having a really good time. And then when he finally gets to Losef and everything, you know, he wants him to know that it's me that's coming after you. And of course Losef gets the hell out of there, and then there's this whole, you know, battle between John and these you know, these goons or whatnot. And John gets shot, and the main kind of goon or whatnot, Cruel, that was his name. I think the actor's name is Daniel Bernhardt. I think he is like a martial artist or something like that, action guy and everything. They have a fight, and John ends up getting thrown off the second story on down to the floor, which is a crazy type scene or whatnot. So after that, John kind of, you know, licking his wounds, he goes back to the Continental and everything. And while he's resting or whatnot, we see where Marcus is in a building that's on top of a building across the street, and he has a sniper rifle, and it looks like he's about to shoot John, but he notices that someone else is creeping in the room, which we find out is Miss Perkins, played by Adrian Pilecki. And he gives like a warning shot for John to move in a sense, and then John gets into it with Perkins and everything, and which is kind of funny of this fight scene, because John is hurt, he's kind of resting, but she comes in and they get into this crazy back and forth, and then John ends up, you know, getting the better of her, because the fact that the reason why Perkins even decides to do this is because Vigo, in his paranoid mode, he decides to, you know, put a contract out on John's head, and Perkins accepts the challenge to do this. And one of the things about the Continental is that no business is to be conducted on the premises and whatnot. But Perkins, of course, breaks that rule and everything. Another thing about this movie too is that there's some references to the Matrix films in this, and also too about Keanu Reeves, his like history, you know, and everything, with especially him being an actor and everything, because quite a bit throughout the movie is things about him, you know, coming out of retirement and him being back and everything like this, where for anyone who don't know, Keanu Reeves did take like a few years away from acting, you know, to kind of focus on his band and everything like this. And so he did come back. I mean, he had movies come out, but I think some of those movies had been filmed like a couple of years before he actually took the time off in a way. So when he came back, you know, with John Wick, it was like the freshest thing that he was doing. So it is references about him being back, and then also to him, you know, kind of being an action guy at one point. I mean, Point Break and Speed, you know, in movies like that, of course the Matrix movies, Constantine and things of that nature, with him doing action and things of you know, like that. So he's kind of gotten back to that. But I think one thing that separates John Wick from those movies is that John Wick seems to be more grounded and everything, even though some of the stuff, well, no, I won't even say some of the stuff, no, it seems very grounded. And then his whole kind of assassins underworld that he's involved in, it's very interesting stuff too, and we do kind of get to learn more about it as this movie goes along, and also in chapter 2, and most likely we'll get even more in depth in it in chapter 3, and everything. So John, he, you know, after the whole thing with Perkins and everything, he decides to go really take things to Vigo, and he goes to a church where Vigo money is, and he basically goes in there, burns up all the money. He catches Vigo and his goons on the street, which is almost like a funny scene almost, because Vigo and his guys walking down the street, and then John just shows up and ambushes them. But instead, John gets caught because the same guy, Krill, he's there, and he basically, you know, kind of takes John out a little bit, and John gets captured, and Vigo, he basically is going to kill John at this point, because John is hell-bent on revenge, and Vigo is like, okay, I put this hit out on you, and you still, you know, you couldn't die or whatnot, so now I might as well just kill you here and now and everything. So Vigo and some of his guys leaves, but some of the guys stay behind. They try to kill John, but Marcus is kind of, I would say he's almost like John's, like, guardian angel in a sense, because he's there, and he, you know, kind of helps John get free enough to where he can get himself out of there and everything. And so John, he talks to Vigo, and he tells him, they get into a conversation, and this scene is always interesting to me, why exactly Vigo decided to tell John exactly where Losef is. He's in a safe house or whatnot, but Vigo decides to give up Losef the way he did, and it's like, well, you spent all this time trying to protect him, why didn't you continue to protect him? You decide to just, you know, give him over to the boogeyman, which he does, and John goes and shows up, he kills Losef and all of his guys and whatnot, and you're kind of thinking that everything is over or whatnot, but it's not, because Perkins, who was being held by Harry, played by Clark Peters from The Wire fame and everything, while he's kind of watching over her back at the hotel, she gets free, she kills Harry, and she gets loose, and she tells, she actually catches John and Marcus having a talk or whatnot, and she goes and tells Viggo about it, and Viggo ends up capturing Marcus and kills him and lets John know it. So by that virtue, that kind of brings John right back into it. When John thinks everything is done, he gotta have to go in because Marcus was his friend. So now he really has to go after Viggo. And all the while this is happening, Miss Perkins, who thinks she's, you know, scot-free or whatnot, because she's trying to go after John or whatnot, Winston and some of his men show up, and Winston, knowing what happened back at the hotel, he tells her that her membership has been revoked, and she gets gunned down by some of Winston's people, and they just leave her there or whatnot. As Charlie, played by David Patrick Kelly, he's like a he's more like an undertaker type. He's like a cleanup man. You pay him, he comes in, him and his guys, they clean up and, you know, get rid of the bodies type of thing. And that's what his role was in this movie. So John, he finds Marcus' dead body, and like I said, that's why he wants to go after Viggo, and he ends up going after him, and he catches him, and he kills all of his guys, and kills Viggo, and everything. And the interesting thing about this movie, and even though I've seen it a few times, it wasn't until I watched it for this episode that I realized that the beginning of the movie was not actually an old job. It was actually, the opening to this movie is actually the end of this movie, and everything, because it comes back full circle to where John, he's kind of wounded and everything, and he crashes the SUV, and he passes out. He wakes up, and he breaks into this pound or whatnot, and he takes this dog, and everything. He gets the dog, and he leaves. So basically, it ends with he just wanted another dog, in a sense, to, you know, I guess to cling on to his wife, memory and everything. And the movie basically ends with him, you know, leaving with this dog. That's how the first movie ends. So I will go ahead and give my rating for this movie. I give this movie a 4 out of 5. I just really like this first movie a lot and everything. Favorite character from this movie has to be John Wick, because it is all about John Wick and everything. But everyone does a really good job in this first movie, and it's just the introduction to this whole underworld. So that's my thoughts on John Wick. And right after this, it might be an ad, or it might be a clip from John Wick Chapter 2. I haven't decided which one it is, but whatever it is, you'll know when you listen to it on the episode. So I'll be right back after this brief break.
Kimber 1911, 45 ACP. 7-round capacity.
$7 million
gets you 7 rounds. That's $1 million a round, baby.
Let's go.
Your descent into hell begins here, Mr. Wick. He's at the museum. Earl will guide you. Do be careful on your way down. Oh, and remember, you owe me.
You don't want me owing you.
Okay, so I'm back. And here we are. I'm talking about John Wick Chapter 2. I just talked about Part 1. So now I'm back to talk about John Wick Chapter 2, which came out in 2017, 3 years after the first movie came out. Once again, it stars Keanu Reeves as the title character of John Wick. We also have returning Ian McShane, Lance Reddick, John Leguizamo. He shows back up as Aurelio. Bridget Moynihan again in flashback as Helen. David Patrick Kelly as well. Those are like the people that kind of return from the first movie. But some of the newer cast members here, we have Ricardo Sacramaco as Santino D'Antonio. Ruby Rose as Ares, Common as Cassian, Claudia Guarino as Gianna D'Antonio, Lawrence Fishburne as the Bowery King, Franco Nero, I forgot. Franco Nero shows up as Julius, and that's pretty much it I forgot also to Peter Stormare as Abram as well. Yeah, so those are pretty much all the newer cast members and everything like this. So with part two, it technically picks up right after the first one, even though a little bit of time has gone by. But the movie basically opens with John. He's trying to get his car back. So because, like I said, the first movie ended with where he, he got a new dog, but he wanted to get his car back. So he ends up at this warehouse and everything, and he basically fighting all these guys to get his car back. But in the process of this, sitting up in the office is Peter Stormare as Abram, who we find out is Viggo's brother. And he's basically kind of continuing the legend and talking about John Wick being the boogeyman and everything, and how he's afraid, you know, that he might be coming for him. And I really enjoy how they kind of cut back and forth between Peter Stormare telling the story about John Wick and how afraid he is, and showing John Wick, you know, just basically brutalizing these dudes and everything. He's taking some licks too, but he just keeps on going because he's like this killing machine at this point. And it was really cool kind of seeing Peter Stormare once again, and the whole connection between Keanu Reeves and him from Constantine, I thought was a cool thing too, because in that movie he played Peter Stormare played the played the devil there. Here, in a way, John Wick is the devil or the boogeyman or whatever and everything. He's the evil entity here. So I kind of like how somewhat their roles were reversed, because after John, you know, he fights through all the guys and whatnot, he ends up in the office and they kind of have a few words and everything, and then John leaves. He doesn't kill him, which I was a little surprised by that. And it's the only time we see him in the movie. And it's like, well, it would have been nice if we seen him a little bit more, because he is a good actor too. And it would have been interesting if he would have been like the big bad here, but he's not. So kind of similar to the first movie, John, he basically retires again, and he wants to really try to live this, you know, regular life, not normal life, but this regular life. Him and the dog here has gotten a little bit bigger and everything from the first movie. And everything, he's, you know, hanging out with the dog. The car has been completely destroyed. So he calls Aurelio, who shows up, and he's like, Jesus, what the hell happened to the car? I thought you loved this car and everything. And he's like, well, can you fix that? Yeah, I can fix it and everything. So yeah, it won't be ready until like 2023 or something like that, because this car is really completely torn to hell. So while John is, you know, at his home or whatnot, he gets a knock on the door, and we see a gentleman and his people are there, and we find out this is Santino D'Antonio, and he's a high-ranking person of this underworld that John was affiliated with. And he comes there to basically call John's hand on a marker that John had, you know, vowed to do for him at some point whenever D'Antonio wanted to collect, and he decides to collect now. And John, being in the, you know, position, the state that he's in right now, he doesn't want to do it. He is officially retired and he refuses. And D'Antonio, of course, he tries to be nice about it. He's like, well, he's like, okay, all right, I guess you are the wrong person to ask to do this, even though it's one of their rules where if someone, you know, comes to collect the marker or whatnot, whoever is the one that made the, you know, did the marker, that agreed to the marker, they have to do it no matter what. And because he refused, D'Antonio goes back outside, gets a freaking grenade launcher, and proceeds to blow up John's house. John is thrown from the house, and the house is destroyed. And thankfully, this time, the dog is not killed here. Unlike the first movie, the dog is killed. But this time, the dog is not killed. So that was a good thing. So John, being pissed like he is, he goes to see Winston and everything. And Winston basically tells him that, you know, he has to, you know, agree to do this. It doesn't matter that he's retired. He shouldn't have made this agreement with D'Antonio, but because he did make the agreement, he has to do this. He said, but once you've done the job and everything, all bets, you know, you can do whatever you like after that. If you want to go and kill him and burn down his house, fine. But until the marker is completed, he has to do the job. So John reluctantly, he goes to see D'Antonio and asks him exactly, okay, what the hell is it that you want me to do? And we find out that Santino D'Antonio wants John to kill his sister, who actually has a seat on the high council of this whole, you know, underworld thing, because when their father died, he named her his successor and not Santino, and Santino is pissed about it. So even though he loves his sister, he wants his sister killed so he can have her position, which is crazy to me, but that's what happens. So John is like, really, that's what you really want? So John decides to go to Rome, even though he says that it's a job that can't be done, but he decides to go to Rome. And he gets himself ready, gets some new clothes that is padded with armor, and gets some new guns and everything. And he basically is going to go do a job that even he himself doesn't feel that can be done. But he's probably thinking, well, one of two things is going to happen. Either I will die trying to kill her, or I will succeed to kill her, and then I will be killed later, apparently. But either way, I'm going to do this job. So that's kind of what happens. One of the things I do like about this movie is that we do get an expanded world of this whole kind of underworld society of this High Council, the Continental, the Assassins, you know, kind of, you know, hierarchy and everything and how that works and whatnot. We get more of that in this movie, which I did like a lot. And then also, too, Common shows up as Cassian, who is Gianna's he's her right hand man or something like that, and everything. And I thought Common did a pretty good job here. I mean, he has showed up in quite a few movies with some really high profile actors, and he seems to always pick like good roles to play. I don't think I've seen him in a bad role or anything in any of the movies or even TV show that he's been in. He seems to pick the right roles, so that's always a good thing. I kind of liked him here, even though he's against John Wick, but I thought he had a good role here. And one of the cool things, too, is that him and John, they have a couple of fight scenes throughout the movie. The first one is, of course, after Gianna is killed and everything, and they kind of pass by each other, and they kind of greet each other, like, are you working? It's like, yeah. It's like, and you can tell like the tension builds. It's almost like a Western type showdown, because it's just showing them like they just, one is waiting for the other one to move, and they basically draw on each other and they kind of shoot, and John gets shot, but because he has on the armor under his that's padded into his suit and everything, it doesn't really affect him like that. And then we get this whole crazy battle or shootout down in the catacombs and things like that. But that's the first time that they actually fight. The second time that they meet, still in the same night when John is trying to get away, they actually have like a fist street fight out in the street and everything. And they end up back at the Rome's version of the Continental, which is run by Franco Nero. So Franco Nero is basically the Roman version of Winston in a way, which I thought that was a good touch and everything. And he basically, you know, tells them to calm down, have a drink, because now they're on continental property and no business is to be conducted on continental property. So one thing I did like about that scene with them in the continental Rome is that when Cassian leaves, he tells John that this is a professional courtesy and whatnot, and everything. And then the next time that they fight is later on in the film. They get in a fight on in a train. Well, actually, it starts out on the street where they kind of have a shootout, and then they end up on a train. They get into a knife fight, and John stabs him in the chest and lets him know that if he takes the knife out, he will die. And John tells him, consider this a professional courtesy. So I always like that kind of back and forth between the two of them and everything. And when John leaves, Cassian just kind of sits there with a smile on his face or whatnot. So I mean, it's like a running thing. I always call that like the Peter versus Chicken fight from Family Guy, where they just run into each other and they just get into a crazy fight whenever they see each other or whatnot. So after the whole thing that happens with Gianna being killed, Santino decides to double cross John, and he puts out a hit on John, which forces a lot of assassins to come out of the woodworks to try to collect this on John. So as John is basically walking down the street, similar to like the legends of what we've always heard about Bruce Lee, where he got into a bunch of street fights or whatnot, John just walking down the street trying to get to a safe place, he gets attacked by random assassins and everything. He basically has to fight to kill these people. So we get like a montage of that with assassins. One is this lady that's a violinist or whatnot. She comes across John and she basically shoots him in the side, and then they get into a fight. He kills her. This big, huge Asian guy, John is walking past him on the street. He just comes out clothesline out of nowhere. Then they get into a big fight, and John's end up having to shoot him in the head a couple of times to get him down. And then these two guys down in the subway or whatnot get into a fight with them. And in the first movie, it's brought up about John killing, you know, someone with a pencil. So here we actually get to see him kill two people with a pencil. One, he sticks a pencil all the way through his ear. The other guy, he stabs him through the back of the head with the pencil, after he stabs him in the eye with it, of course. But in the process of this, John feeling like he's probably not going to get out of there alive while he's down there, because a couple of the assassins, they show up and they chase John, and John ends up going to this homeless guy, and he drops in one of these kind of coins that is basically continental coins and stuff like that. He tells the guy, take me to him. And the homeless dude, he basically covers John up with some of his stuff. And as the guys come up, he's like, hey, you guys got a quarter? He takes out a gun, he shoots him, and we find out these guys are basically assassins too. But these other homeless dudes, they show up, takes the guns and takes the bodies away. So the guy that John meets, his name is Earl, and Earl takes John to meet the Bowery King, who is played by Lawrence Fishburne. And one of the things that I did like about this is that it's a reunion between Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne, because they probably haven't seen each other since The Matrix Part 3, but it's a nice kind of on-film reunion between the two as well. And once again, there's some type of, you know, back and forth reference about, you know, John, you know, coming out of retirement and say, I thought you were retired, and John's like, I'm working on it, which I feel like is a real thing. I think Keanu Reeves is probably trying to retire, but he seems to be getting back into acting, so he's not really working on it at this point, especially with the fact that Bill and Ted Part 3 is going to be coming out. And he does a voice in Toy Story 4, and he has like a few other movies lined up as well. So he might not be going anywhere anytime soon or anything like that. Another thing about this movie, not so much in the first movie, but this movie, there are quite a few biblical references. Mainly the whole heaven and hell thing. There's a scene early in the movie when John is in his house or whatnot. You see on his left side the rain, but it's nice and clear. But on the red side, on the right side, the wall in his house is kind of lit up red, so it looks like flame or whatnot. And then there's John walking down the middle. It's like he's in purgatory in a sense, and he got heaven and hell on both sides. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. And then when he goes to see Winston and everything, when he walks in, the way it's framed, you see behind him, because there's a statue with wings and whatnot, but the way he's in the middle of the shot is as if he's the he's an angel, you know, and he's an angel or whatnot. And it's very interesting. And then later in the movie, it's like the descent into hell when the Bowery King basically gives John safe passage to go and try to kill D'Antonio. The Bowery King even says, like, your descent, you know, be careful on your way down. Because you're going, it's like you're going further down the, you know, basically different levels of hell type of thing. So, like I said, the movie has a lot of that in it as well. Speaking of D'Antonio, Ricardo Sacramarco, that's a tongue twister of a name. I really did not like his character. I know. In the first movie with Alfie Allen, you're not supposed to like him, but you kind of give him a pass because he's a young, stupid punk or whatnot. So you kind of give him a pass. But D'Antonio here, who is basically your big bad in a way, I really hated his character. And I guess that attributes to the actor. He does a really good job making you hate him. But for me, most bad guys, I tend to like. I mean, one of my favorite bad guy actors is Gary Oldman, who made a career playing bad guys that you just love to hate. Alan Rickman in Die Hard as Hans Gruber. Even Jeremy Irons as Simon Gruber. Those are the type of bad guys that even though they're bad guys, but you like them, you enjoy them, because they seem to be having fun playing these roles. But I really hated the D'Antonio character. And everything, because there's nothing really to like. He's just this swarmy son of a bitch, really. He wants to kill his sister because she was given a position that their dad gave her. It wasn't stolen from him, but he feels, you know, unjust because it didn't come to him. Well, there's probably a reason why the dad didn't give him, you know, leave the seat to him opposed to the sister. It's probably because of the way he is. And then after his sister's killed, he decides to double cross John to have him killed. And then he even goats John on later on in the movie and everything like that. And it just, like I said, I just really kind of hate this guy. But I will say this, even though Ricardo, he does a really good job as Santino, but for some reason, watching it once again for this episode, I could have seen Benicio del Toro play that part. And if he would have played that part, I think he would have brought a little bit more of a swagger to the character, if that makes sense, and everything. I don't know, just always felt like there was something missing from the character. He even though he's a swarmy guy, but he still could have had, he could have been cool, I think. And Ricardo doesn't play him cool, he plays him like a weasel. And I don't like weasel, big bad characters, and everything. So John finds D'Antonio at this art gallery thing, and he basically gets into a big shootout with a lot of D'Antonio guys, and everything. And they end up down in this this place where it's called the. Reflections of the Souls, and there's a lot of mirrors through the doorways and everything. So it's almost very similar to the end of the Dragon with Bruce Lee. And like I said, even with this movie, there's quite a few references to Bruce Lee. Like I said, the whole thing about the street fights, and then the ending sequences with them down in the Reflections of the Soul with the mirrors, and like how you move through them, and there's different, you know, reflections of yourself and everything. So while they're down there, I failed to mention about Ruby Rose. I didn't even talk too much about her. She plays the silent assassin, Ares, that's D'Antonio's right-hand woman and everything. And she does a good job here, even though she doesn't talk because she's a mute, but she does sign language, and I think she does a good job with the sign language, and she has a few, you know, kind of back and forth with John throughout the movie, you know, signing and everything like that, and they get into a fight down in the Reflections of the Souls. And now, I did find it interesting that now, early in the film, when he stabs Cassidy in the chest, he leaves it in and gives him a choice. But with Ares, when he stabs her, well, he stabs her through the hand and then pushes her hand with the knife sticking out into her chest, and he snatches it out. So clearly he did not want to give her the same professional courtesy that he gave Ares, that he gave Cassian earlier. And I always find it interesting why he didn't do that. But I guess it's because she worked for D'Antonio, and he just wanted to kill all of his people. He didn't give her the same professional courtesy that he gave Cassian. So, some way, somehow, Santino, he weasels his way out of this art gallery place, and he finds his, he runs to the Continental. And because he's there, it's almost like Highlander, you know, it's, you know, on holy land or whatnot. You can't do anything on holy land. And that's what the Continentals are. They're safe houses, and nothing bad should ever happen in one of these places. And Santino basically feels like, well, he know that John can never do anything to him while he's, you know, in this safe house or whatnot. And John comes in, and Winston is, like, trying to calm him down. He's called him Jonathan. And I always find it funny he calls him Jonathan. Everyone else just calls him John, but Winston calls him Jonathan. He's like, you know, just calm down, you know, just walk away and don't do anything, you know, at least not in here. And Santino is basically goading him on. It's like, yes, Jonathan, you know, and everything like this. And John just basically like, screw it. He shoots and kills Santino right there. Everyone is looking. And Winston, I love Ian McShane, how he says, it's like, Jonathan, what have you done? Like, that is very stern, but is like he was trying to stop him from doing it. But I think he understood why John did it and everything, because of the fact that Santino was basically trying to hide behind his position in a way. And John just said, screw it. He can deal with whatever, you know, happens after. He'll deal with the consequences after. And the consequences that, of course, came after this is that John goes to meet Winston and everything, and Winston lets him know that he's been excommunicado, which is basically he's basically being banished in a way, and now he is getting a huge $14 million bounty on his head. And because Winston does like John a lot, he gives him 1 hour to flee, you know, in order to get away and everything like that. But he gives him 1 hour before it goes green and every single assassin in the world will be coming after him. And I know it sets up for the next movie, it had to, but it's because of this freaking Santino character is that this even happened, because John was done and he basically forced him back in, and then even after that you double cross him, in which he forced John Hand to kill him on Continental property, which forced Winston to excommunicado him, and which forced Winston to basically put this, well, the higher council to put a $14 million bounty on John's head. But I will say this, it's almost kind of sad in a way when John is leaving and he's going through Central Park, and he's going through the park, and he's, you know, him and the dog are walking, and all of a sudden you see all these phones starting to ring, and they're getting the notification that this bounty has been put out on John's head, and they all turning and looking at him, and John realizing what's going on, and so him and the dog start running, they're just running, and that's how it ends, with him running. So I'm pretty sure chapter 3 is going to pick up, you know, after that and go from there. I really can't wait to see chapter 3 to see how this whole thing ends. And I kind of hope that it wraps it up, that chapter 3 will be the last one. I don't think it needs to go any further than that. I didn't think it was going to be a trilogy of films, but it is. But I think it should end at a trilogy. I think it's been a while since we've had a trilogy. I think, the Taken films has been the last one that's actually been just 1, 2, and 3 and done, and everything. So hopefully chapter 3 will be the final chapter of this. And when I say final chapter, I do mean the final chapter, or whatnot. But even though I don't like the Santino character or whatnot, but I do enjoy chapter 2 a lot, because it amps everything up from the first movie up even more, and we get more of the whole world building aspect of the film and everything. And like I said, Keanu Reeves, he just really becomes this character, and it's one of my favorite characters of his that he's played over the years as well. So if I had to rate this movie, I would actually give it a 4.5. Even with the fact that I don't like the Santino character, I say that once again, even though I don't like the Santino character, but I do give it a 4.5 out of 5, and everything. And I'm very looking forward to chapter 3. If I had to go with a favorite character, I'm trying to think of somebody besides. Well, I actually liked Winston in this one. I won't go with John Wick. I know I went with John Wick in the first one, but because we get a more cast of characters that show up here, and do even more or whatnot. But I go with Winston because his role is kind of bigger here. And there's a scene with him when he's talking with John at the end, when he's telling him, you know, about him being excommunicado and everything, and how he basically gets everyone that's there to stop, and they all stop and stare at John. It's almost like a freeze frame in a way. And then he kind of gives a nod, and they all just kind of go back. It's one of my favorite scenes, even though it's toward the end of the movie, but it's one of the best scenes in the movie, because it makes you wonder exactly what is Winston's true position in this whole hierarchy or whatnot. And hopefully we get more of that story about exactly who Winston is in part 3. So I'm kind of looking, that's one of the things I'm looking forward to more, because it seems like there is more to the Winston character, and basically based off that one scene. So I want to thank you guys for listening to this episode. Can't believe I talked about 2 films in less than an hour's time, and everything like that. So if you haven't seen either chapter 1 or chapter 2, I know I'm saying this at the end, but if you haven't seen either one of these movies, definitely should check them out. And if it's been a while since you've seen them, definitely check them out before you go see chapter 3. And I do recommend, even though I haven't seen it yet myself, but I'm going to see chapter 3. I might talk about it on the next episode that I do briefly or whatnot. I won't give any spoilers or anything, just to give like some initial thoughts about it and everything. So should definitely go check out chapter 3 if you are a fan of these films and everything. Of course, with me, you can find me on Twitter at JMovieTalk, and everything on Twitter, on Instagram, JMT Podcast. You can find all of the JMovieTalk episodes on the TV Zone Podcast Network, on Podbean.com, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, CastBox, wherever else you listen to your podcast and things of that nature. And I will be back for episode 122, as I will be talking the Joe Carnahan film, Smoking Aces. I'll catch you guys next time. Peace.